I'm recording from the lands of the Wathaurong people as usual, and I wish to pay my respects to elders past and present.
Michelle and I are both recording from the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We would also like to pay our respects to elders past and present, and we wish to acknowledge that this always was and always will be Aboriginal land. This episode of The Significant Others is sponsored by Spray Oz, a female-founded and led company that specialises in organic tanning. It's the kind of tan that your skin's going to thank you for, because Spray Oz is packed full of nourishing plant and fruit oils, so you get a beautiful post-holiday glow without any sun damage. Spray Oz is led by female powerhouses M. McKay and L. Pearson, who have 3 studios in South Yarra, Moonee Ponds and Richmond for the perfect spray tan. But they also have at-home products that are available online at sprayoz.com.au. Spray Oz tans are vegan friendly and also safe for breastfeeding. Thank you to Spray Oz for making this episode of The Significant Others possible. Just a heads up that this episode of The Significant Others contains explicit language and discussions about sex. Just in case you're in the car listening with your parents. Today we're joined by a very special guest. We're so excited to have you here, Michelle Andrews, journalist, broadcaster, and one half of the Shameless podcast and the media giant that is Shameless. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much. I don't know if media giant is accurate. There's 6 of us in the office, but it has kind of grown a lot since it was just Zara and I on Zara's bedroom floor making the podcast. But yeah, thank you so much for having me. I was so excited to be asked to come on, and I particularly liked this week's episode, actually. I found it really, really interesting. As someone who probably doesn't know enough about climate change or really invest enough into the environment, it was kind of a bit of a wake-up call for me. So thank you for that.
Yeah, Emma was really great. Like, it was a very different perspective on passions. I think we definitely haven't had that conversation from any of our guests on the podcast before. And whenever we record someone from, I guess, outside of the AFL bubble that Hester and I kind of live in, it's often a guest that we don't have a lot of background on either. So Emma was really great. I'm glad you liked it, Mish.
I think as well, she was someone who her passion was so infectious. Like, I love passion in people. I love when people have a purpose or have something that they're super invested and interested in. And given hers is something that's genuinely so helpful to all of our lives, it's so enjoyable to listen to people kind of share that.
It is a really selfless passion, isn't it? Like, it's not just something that affects her. She's like, oh, no, the reason I'm interested in this is because it affects the whole world. And she's been actively promoting it. And with her husband as well, with David, like, I was reading about him because obviously there's a lot more media and things to read up on about him than her prior to our interview with her. But he, like, chained himself to a tree and was protesting, like, at the height of his career, which is so cool. Like, using your profile for something that is, like, you know, quite a few years ago too, it probably wasn't as cool as it kind of is now too. And she's using that, like, she's using that experience to then help other people, help other athletes engage in that conversation in a meaningful and productive way too. Like, she's actually taking that passion and making it accessible for people.
So did anybody notice the fruits of her labor sort of starting to seed this week? I noticed Jordan Roughhead of the Collingwood Football Club not only wrote an article, but I also saw he was on TV talking about climate action. So I think that's the first time I've seen that coming from anyone from the AFL publicly. So I don't know. I wonder if there's a little bit of a connection there.
Wow, that's epic. I hadn't seen that. That's really awesome. But when I was listening to the interview, I was like, wow, I have heard a lot of incredible football players, particularly in the wake of Black Lives Matter, stand up and really speak on that. But as far as the climate crisis goes, I haven't. But that's really impressive that people are coming out so quickly.
I think that's because Black Lives Matter is so obvious to see how you can impact and the impact on somebody's life as a person of color that they have experienced racism. And here is the literal example in front of you. Like, it's, we're recording it. It happens at football games. Like, there's evidence of it. And climate change is really hard to see in your everyday life or in the everyday life of someone that you love. But she's kind of bringing that forward. You have to get really deep into it to understand the impact. And I guess that's what she was talking about with their work in Zimbabwe. Like, it's really, really obvious because the crops that they're growing mean they either eat and send their kids to school or don't.
Yeah, and I think that's where I need to check myself because I'm so metropolitan based. I really don't spend much time at all in rural or remote Australia. It's just wild to think that this could be happening around us, and it can creep up so slowly and so incrementally that we find ourselves in 10, 20 years time in a position where we literally can't reverse the damage we've done because it's happened so slowly and we've been such a sleeping giant to actually doing anything about it. It's scary, but it fills me with hope that people like Emma exist who are actually encouraging people to make change in their personal lives, but also policies to change. Like, that's actually what needs to happen if anything's going to move. So yeah, she's an incredible woman.
And I love that she's using sport as the change too, as this driving change. We talk about sport and politics intersecting all the time because they do, because sport has a foundation in our culture and people are so invested in it. So if we can use that to get people to invest in things that are actually a bit more important, that's a great thing.
I feel like that could be, you know, a bit of a common thread in significant others and in people that we talk to, in that they've sort of found their self in sport accidentally, in that, you know, you've married into, or you've met somebody who's a sports person, you have this passion for some sort of social issue, and then all of a sudden that link becomes clear that you can use sport to drive what's important to you. So one other thing that Emma spoke about, and I suppose related to that climate passion, was the decision that her and David made not to have children. But the way the media took that story and changed the narrative and trivialized something so serious, I suppose, to get that controversial, juicy sort of angle. So we thought it could be a really good time to talk to you, Michelle, and get your opinion as somebody who is a pop culture broadcaster and journalist. How can we better have those conversations? How can we talk about people's private lives or personal information in a way that's interested instead of intrusive, in a way that's feminist instead of trivializing and bringing people down?
It's a really interesting one. I come to this from a couple of different perspectives, because when I first began my career, I worked in digital media and I was writing like digital news articles every day. And the tricky thing about digital media is that every media company works by the same KPI, and that is, how many clicks can we get on the website today? Clicks turn into advertising revenue. The more people we get on the site, the more we can go out to the big brands in the country and go, this is the number of eyeballs you'll get. What amount of money can you give us? So the most eyeballs, the most money. We all know that. But the tricky thing with digital media is that you are asked to put very complicated, very nuanced arguments into very short, very simple headlines and paragraphs or copy. And I think there needs to be more public awareness as to how these newsrooms are run and what they're run for. They're run for a profit. And I think that's why the ABC is so important in Australia. I am a huge, huge fan of the ABC and the work that they do. In fact, an Australia without an ABC would be a really dire Australia, because we'd be left with a bunch of media corporations, although some are better than others and some are incredible, like The Guardian, which can also be funded by the reader instead of advertisers. We still find ourselves in a situation where mostly articles are written for clicks rather than to actually inform and educate readers. And I think that was actually a huge reason why Zara, my co-host on Shameless, and I left digital media. We did not like the platform. It is basically a race to the bottom. It's a race to get articles out first. And that means that you are hastily writing things. You are quickly fact-checking. You are racing against other publications to get an article up first, because if it's up first, it gets promoted most in Google, gets promoted most in Facebook, in Instagram, whatever. But then you're also just basically racing to get the juiciest tidbit or angle on it. And unfortunately, in the case of Emma in particular with that story, she has something that's incredibly heartfelt and incredibly personal turned into something that's salacious, or almost like a commentary on lefties gone mad or PC culture gone to the nth degree and snowflake lefties are ruining the country, or they're making ridiculous choices or whatever, which is absolutely not the case. I think the interesting one with Emma is that she is making a decision that is completely personal and affects literally no one else. Like, no one outside of Emma Pocock and her partner is affected by whether or not they have children. In fact, it doesn't affect anyone at News Corp. It doesn't affect Mark Latham. And yet the way that media publications put spin on these things is to try and like feed this moral panic that society's changing forever, the world's changing forever, nothing will ever be the same because Emma Pocock isn't going to birth children. It's a really tricky place to be in, and unfortunately, public figures or people who are on the periphery of the public eye can just be slammed in the media because it's the juiciest angle that media publications want to take.
How much do, I guess from that perspective of trying to get things out quickly and fact checking, what is the requirement to fact check? Is it like,
it's really interesting, so that must be the term rewrite. I know you've alluded to that.
Where's the accountability for saying that,
like, publications literally rewrite articles that are already out there by rivals?
Is there a standard?
That is in the lexicon. When you work at a media publication, and particularly when I worked as a junior journo, I would be sent on Slack links to articles that had just gone up in the last hour, and the instruction would be to rewrite that article. Not necessarily add anything, not change anything massively, just almost replicate in different words the same sentiment and the same quotes and the same points from that article, which is a terrible system for us to have in the media. And it's also one where, believe me, there's very, very little fact-checking going on. And that is not the fault of junior people in the media. It's the fault of a lot of things. First of all, there isn't much money going around, actually, and junior journos are underpaid. They are overworked. They are given too much to cover within a day, that there is simply not enough hours to actually go out and get the information and verify the information and fact-check it. Like, Zara and I come across tiny examples of this all the time, even in the stuff that we cover on Shameless, that we'll be like researching a story and just doing very rudimentary stuff on getting the fact right. Like, what is the person's name and how is it spelt? How old is the person and where do they live? And the number of times that the first publication gets those details wrong, and then those incorrect details are regurgitated in every other write-up of that story, is actually slightly scary, because even if it happens in a story that's not really that important, like it's someone's age and it doesn't really matter that much, it really does make you think, what other important details are completely butchered or completely manipulated in more important, more consequential stories? And I found it interesting with Emma talking about how she had sat in interviews and heard quotes and then seen how they were manipulated or changed in the actual article that would come out. And I completely believe her. I think that is absolutely the case when it comes to written content in particular. And that's why I like to lean into podcasting, because although you can edit things, the person's words are there. And yeah, it's just a shame. We really do find ourselves in a pretty perilous point, which I hate to say because I don't really know a good way to come out of it. But I hope that our generation in particular can lean more into long-form media that actually is a little bit slower, isn't that clickbait journalism. Because if you're getting second to a story and if you're coming up behind the Daily Mail, you do have to sensationalize the way you're selling it. Particularly, you have to find a really juicy image, actually. And although people might not think a lot about that, I think the images that we see of people in the public eye, particularly the images we see of women, can be really destructive. I really lament the way that people like Nadia Bartel are written about in the media, and I find the way that we kind of curate someone's public image and take it completely out of their own hands is dangerous, and it's dangerous to people's mental health, and it's dangerous to their reputation, which is kind of everything.
Nadia is one that Hester and I have spoken about quite a bit, because I feel like every time there is a negative article written about a partner of a sports person, whether it's her or not, she's used, her image is used, and it is just fueling fire of hatred. And they're always negative articles, like they're always quite awful. It's kind of, it is damaging to her brand, and it's something that she's like grown beyond but keeps getting like sucked back into. Again, when we were in the Hubs last year and there was all the discussion around, oh, they're sitting by the pool in G-strings sunbaking all day, and they're using all these images from holidays from 5 and 6 years ago where people are, yeah, sure, they're holidaying by the pool in the Maldives or somewhere glorious, but that's not what they're doing right now. Like, that's a five-year-old holiday image. Should they pull from Instagram? Like, there's no, as you said, Michelle, that you're copying someone else's work and assuming that it's right. So is that fact checking? Like, is that enough when it is, it can be damaging to someone's brand, and is that enough to fall back on? Like, oh, well, they did it, so it must be fine.
Yeah, I don't think it is in any way. And I think a lot of accountability probably needs to be put on the editors in newsrooms. They're the ones who curate the stories, who assign the stories to junior writers, and who actually kind of have a real handle on how the public thinks about things and how they consider things. And so it's tricky. Often the people who are behind the scenes and actually don't have a front-facing role in the media are the ones who can attack those who do have front-facing roles and really go for them. The way we talk about partners of athletes, particularly partners of male athletes, is an interesting one to me, because I feel like it's one I've tried to unpick for a long time. And I don't know why there's so much snarkiness. Like, I still struggle to really unpack where the level of sneering comes from. But I know, having worked at Mamma Mia, which is or was at the time the country's largest women's publication online, it was a very weird amalgamation of things where if there was an article to go up about a partner of a male athlete, that article would get more traction than any other article about any other public figure. I remember we used to cop it, the number of articles that were written about Beck Judd. And you find yourself in this chicken and egg scenario where, as a writer, you're continually given articles about this person. You're continually writing about something just completely normal that Beck Judd's posted on Instagram that day. But there's this weird relationship with readers where people keep clicking on it. And I think the tone that people take in these articles and in women's magazines can be really gross, because you're kind of putting something onto these women that they have no control over. They can't do anything about it. And then they just find themselves in the media every single day. And I would personally hate that. I hate feeling like I'm oversaturated or like I'm everywhere, because then you feel annoying. And it's like, well, I have no control over my image or where I am anymore. So the way we think about the Nadias and the Becks in particular is very complicated for women as well. I think there's a lot of internalized misogyny when it comes to how we speak about them, even amongst our friends.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with you, Michelle. I sort of describe it as, I feel like we have this bizarre hole in our feminism. You know, even people who would consider themselves a feminist, it doesn't count if it's the partner of a sports person. And even women will write really awful things, or very judgmental things, very surface look-based judgments on the partners of sports people. And you've looked at this in quite some detail in your new podcast series, Scandal, that you've launched as a part of Shameless Podcast with Zara. Can you tell us a little bit about how that story played out and how you're looking to rewrite that?
So I think we've always found Lara Bingle and the story of Lara Worthington, now she's now married to Sam Worthington, super fascinating. I grew up, I think I was only in high school when the Lara Worthington, Lara Bingle scandal was unfolding. And I remember as a teenager, all of my friends and myself were really harsh on Lara Bingle. Like, we just didn't have a good impression of her. And when she would pop up on a billboard or be collaborating with a brand, my gut reaction was to kind of treat her with disdain. And I actually had a conversation with Zara about it. I remember her saying, we really do, in our friendship away from the podcast, try to unpack our own internalized misogyny. And we were speaking about the women in the public eye that we feel like we have hang-ups with but can't quite make sense of. And I brought up Lara Bingle to her. This was 2-3 years ago. And she brought things to the table then, and she'd done a lot of reading about it and had always found the story very, very interesting. It was trying to like encourage me to look into the media curation of Lara Bingle and the slut shaming of Lara Bingle. And I remember I kind of went through it and I was kind of thinking about the affair with Brendan Favola that Lara was almost entirely blamed for, the breakdown of the engagement to Michael Clarke, but also the subtle, or not so subtle in some cases, inference that Lara Bingle was some kind of gold digger, money-hungry woman who just had to put herself on the arm of an athlete. And when we came up with the idea for Scandal, which is basically retracing celebrity history and unpacking the way we speak about celebrities and public figures and women in particular, the Lara Bingle story just stood out to us as the most obvious one, because I think when we'd done our own reading and gone back, we were really, really taken aback by just how intense the media scrutiny and the vilification of Lara Bingle was at that time, particularly if you look at any of the articles that were written by men, actually, and often written in the sports section in that Lara Bingle was outed as this woman who was the kind of nightmarish athlete partner who dared to have any of her own opinions or dared to ask for any of the spotlight away from Michael Clark when he was vice captain of our test team. There was very much this suggestion from men that if you are a woman and you are involved in sport, your place is to be silent and it's to be on the sidelines. And unfortunately, the people who ingested that and the people who read that 10 years ago probably still subtly hold those beliefs back in their mind, even if they can't point to it now, even if they don't quite remember the exact things they were reading or consuming. They probably still have a very negative opinion of Lara Bingle, Lara Worthington, or they have a generally negative opinion of women who date or are married to or associated with in any way male athletes. And it's just so frustrating because if you tease it out, like Lara was criticized for going to a bowel cancer charity event instead of attending a cricket event where it was expected partners could be there. Like for Lara to be so criticized that she couldn't even support a charity or a cause that her father died from a year before really shows just how ready we are to come for women in all shapes and forms.
From unpacking that, I don't feel like the tone has changed all that much. Maybe the headlines have, and maybe the blame isn't there, but I still feel like that undercurrent and the tone of those conversations remains, and it remains maybe not necessarily as much in print, because I think there's different mediums now. There's things like this and people's social medias. Like there's that instant ability to fact check someone else's article about you too. Like if you read something that's not true, if she'd had the social media reach to say, hey, actually, you know, on an Instagram story, actually, my father passed away a year ago from bowel cancer, so it's something that's really important to me. You can have that response now that maybe she wasn't afforded because of the access to amplifying your own voice. But I feel like the tone is still there that a good wife of a sports person should be seen and not heard and should be on the sidelines. And I guess Hester and I are not necessarily doing that. But I feel like the tone is still there because like exactly what we expected when we did start talking to each other, Hester, is that people weren't here for it.
I think people are particularly harsh on partners of athletes. I think that's even predominantly from women actually sometimes, which is really frustrating. I don't know. Again, it's like, where does it come down to or what does it boil down to? I think there's this weird concurrent thing, like adjacent to this disdain that some people seem to have for partners of athletes, which is totally unfair and unfounded and doesn't really have any basis in anything. There's this concurrent aspiration for some people to date athletes. Like that is this kind of social idea that the most alluring prospect for a young woman would be dating a football player. And we saw that again in the Lara Bingle story, that she was a keen sports fan, according to the media. That was literally a quote in some of the articles, that she had gone from dating an AFL football player and keen sports fan Lara Bingle was now pursuing another champion sportsman. Again, another quote. So it's unusual that at the same time we're trying to say this is what everyone aspires to do, but we don't like the people who actually do it. Like it's just, yeah, I don't know how to make sense of it. I just know that I friggin' hate it.
That's so true. And I think you experience both sides of that as a partner of a sports person. Some people will say to you, oh, how did you get him? Or how did you find him? Like I definitely didn't go out looking. And then the other side of it is people will say to you like, oh, wow, he'll cheat on you, just you wait, or have that really negative reaction. And it's funny you talk about having social media, Marty, to be able to fact check articles about yourself. It's kind of a double-edged sword though, isn't it? Because I feel like if there was a Lara Bingle Instagram at the time when she had have done that, 100% the next headline would have been Lara Bingle slams so-and-so, without a doubt.
I agree. She could have had more of a mouthpiece around that time to try and correct the record. It would be very, very interesting if this had happened today to see how the dial would have moved. I think I agree with you, Marty, that the public perception of partners of athletes hasn't moved. But what I think has moved is how we consider slut shaming. I feel like in 2008, there was almost nothing worse for a woman than to be sexually free and sexually liberated and to actually enjoy sexual pleasure. I think like conversations around pleasure and sex, in my opinion, have only really come about and been really strong within the last few years. Like we see a lot of celebrities come out and endorse vibrators and really speak about that side of life quite freely. I think in 2008, there was a huge level of Lara Bingle and shaming her for sex and wanting sex or wanting to be in relationships with men. Whereas now I would hope if this had happened today, there wouldn't be that really sly element to the story, that maybe it would have been, yes, a scandal that there was the Brendan Favola affair or something like that, but there wouldn't have been this undertone of she's desperate.
You guys brought that up as well. Like she was so young when she was thrust into the spotlight or when she got that role on the ad. And the media sexualizes women. Like she was in a bikini. We all wear bikinis. It doesn't have to be a sexual expression either. Like that was created around her and that image was thrust upon her, I suppose. She's a gorgeous, sexy woman. Like that's fine. These days, like own that. And as you said, yeah, like the sexual liberation and discussion, I think, of women is a really, really good conversation to be having because it kind of normalizes your own autonomy over that too, that women enjoy sex, not just men, and they're not there for the pleasure of men. And I think that's part of the conversation around Lara was that she wasn't necessarily even seen as a human being, her own person. She was something else for somebody.
It's such a mess. And again, to the social media point, if she'd had social media, maybe people would have seen her more as a person because they would have seen her personality. But because we reduced her to her image and we reduced her to her body, she didn't really have an avenue to show us who she was as a person around that time. That's all people saw her as. Like they just saw her as a vehicle for them to have some type of like attraction or whatever, some like titillation. But if she'd had a platform around that time, she would have been able to communicate to her audience, hey, I'm actually an 18-year-old. I actually like going to the beach. I like most of the things you guys do and be able to relate to people on a different level.
It's a very old storyline too, really, that one, the sort of sexual harlot who influences and changes men. You know, she has this effect. She is this sort of evil active agent in that story, as opposed to the man who is the one who cheated on his wife and children, or as opposed to being a love interest. That's, you know, 50% of the story of why two people got together. With that in mind, Michelle, how can we make sure we are changing that story now? How do you, when you set out to make a podcast with Shameless, how do you make sure that you are looking at pop culture conversations from a feminist perspective or a respectful place?
Well, I think the main one is you always need to ask yourself why you're doing what you're doing. It's very common that Zara and I will turn to each other halfway through researching something and say, like, what is the point here? Like, are we just digging up something that was probably quite traumatic for Lara? And that was absolutely something that we really wanted to keep in mind when we made this first series for Scandal. I think it was always front of mind doing this for us to be like, well, she still cops this. Like, we still have people in our lives who have an unfair opinion of Lara, who seem to have forgiven Brendan Favola to a level that they'll never afford Lara Bingle or Lara Worthington. And that needs to be corrected. Like, we're not doing this for any other reason other than to get people to kind of look into themselves. I think my favorite part about my job is hopefully that I can check myself on the shit that I'm flawed with, which is plentiful. Like I said that I once held these opinions about Lara. So in my process of kind of being introspective and unpacking why I believe what I believe or why my gut reaction to someone is a certain way, hopefully as I unpack that and as Zara unpacks that in herself, the listeners can do that. And I would really hope, given that our listenership is so predominantly women in their 20s and 30s, or non-binary people, I would hope that those people can speak to the other kind of demographics in their lives, like maybe speak to their uncle the next time Brendan Favola is brought up around the dinner table, or speak to your boss who might make a snide comment when they see a photo of Lara on the sidebar of the Daily Mail. I think it's just important to try and slowly move sentiment in any way that we can. And I think a huge part I see my role being is hopefully encouraging women to feel like they can actually do that. I think it's a daunting prospect in a conversation with someone to actually push back and go, hang on, is that a bit fucked up? Like, is what you just said really okay? Like, why do you think that? Or why did you say that? That's actually very daunting for a lot of people to do. And it's daunting for me to do. But hopefully, if someone can hear a conversation unfold like that on Scandal or on Shameless, they might feel a little bit more empowered to even just start with their mum. Last week, someone in my life actually made a comment about women's football, and I kind of stopped the conversation and was like, can we, like, what? Like, where does that, let's unpack that together. So if we can do that, I think we're doing our job.
Yeah, should we talk about our weeks?
Let's start with Michelle because she's got the best news. Tell us about your week.
On the weekend, I got engaged, which was very exciting. Yeah, very, very lovely. I've been with my partner for 5.5 years. So we have a dog and a house together. Very, very much in love and so delighted to be engaged. I never really thought about planning a wedding, but that will be the next job now. I just want a huge party with all of our friends. But yeah, it was lovely. He went on a walk with our dog and he had our friends waiting in the bushes taking photos of it all. And then he had organized for our entire family on both sides to actually be at a bar afterwards to surprise us and celebrate with us. And then he got me the day off work the next day and we just had breakfast together and, yeah, relaxed and then went to the hot springs and then had dinner with all of our friends that night. So very thoughtful. He clearly knows who I am because he incorporated family and friends and made it a chill walk with our dog. So he clearly gets it, which is lovely.
You said yes.
It's actually funny because I said yes and I hadn't even looked at the ring and we were hugging for like a minute afterwards. I'm like, I wonder what the ring looks like. You know that too. It's a diamond from his mum's side of the family. So like from the absolute top to tail of the engagement, he's like got it right the whole way through. He's done an incredibly, incredibly good job.
That is so beautiful.
Oh, congratulations. That's so exciting.
Thank you.
Being engaged is a very fun and exciting time.
Yeah, it's been lovely. And it's like a little love bubble, isn't it? Everyone's so excited for you and you're so excited for each other. And it's just all good. Like it's all good and it's all exciting.
I can't top that with my week.
What did you get up to, Mads?
I had the second part of the Making the Call program late last week and that was really amazing and some really cool guests, but I was a little bit starstruck. They had Liz Ellis on and it was really cool. I was like texting my mom. I was like, mom, like I'm talking to Liz Ellis and she just said my name and it was really cool. Probably definitely my highlight. Esther, what have you been up to?
That's a good highlight. My weekend, I was working at a beautiful wedding and it's times like that that does make me feel so lucky to have the best job in the world. It was a bit of a funny one though, because I was just about to start the wedding ceremony and the photographer comes up to me and is like, I just heard that your husband got prolapsed. Probably didn't want to hear that before the start of the ceremony.
Oh my God, you poor thing.
So that was fun. Yeah. He was fine. He's fine. Everything's okay. But one of those weird moments where you're kind of like, I wish nobody knew what was going on in my personal life right now. But it was a great day, beautiful wedding, gorgeous couple. And what about the football this week?
The football this week, it's on. Richmond, Geelong, tomorrow night. It's actually one of the first games of the season I'm not going to, which is sad. I don't know how to feel. I'm a little bit nervous. I get nervous before every game, though. I'm quite a pessimistic supporter, despite being a Richmond supporter, which is ridiculous. I always think we're going to lose for some reason. I always tip against us as well. But how are you feeling,
Marty?
Oh,
my goodness. You can't do that. I always tip against Richmond too, though. Hester, where do Melbourne play this week? Will you be able to go and see Ben in the red and blue? Blue and red? What's in their song?
Yes, playing in Melbourne, I think at the MCG this week. So that's really exciting. Hopefully he stays in the team and I'll be able to watch him run out for the first time, maybe with the little bubby. We love what you're doing, Michelle. Thank you so much for using your platform to help break down those stereotypes and help us look at the way we talk about women in general, but also the female partners of male athletes. So thank you for that.
Guys, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. I'm ready for the game tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the Significant Others podcast. Please keep the conversation going and come and join us on Instagram @The Significant Others Podcast to suggest any interviewees or conversations you'd like us to have.